Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everyone, to our second segment. This is Zambia Blog Talk Radio, and our desire is to inform you and keep you abreast of the happenings in the diaspora and in the nation of Zambia as we bring you information. Once again, your host, Nathan Nkama, from the city of Dallas in the state of Texas. Mwata, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator.
And Cletus, my good friend.
Yes, Nathan.
Honorable Mapalo.
Yes. How is everybody doing this morning?
Everybody's doing okay. Area code 201, welcome to the show.
Is that mine?
Yes, that should be. Thank you for coming back, Dr.
Okay.
Mulenga. We are going to need your fire here. So we are once again to everybody joining us, and welcome back to our second segment. We were talking to Ms. Chansa Kabwela, Post newspaper editor, and Dr. Muna Ndulo, a law professor in New York at Cornell. We were just trying to get first-hand information on the proceedings of that case. In this segment, we are going to have an open discussion and talk about issues to do and affecting the judicial system. In the first segment, I made a comment. I said from my basic civics education, I was taught that government exists or has got three wings, the executive, the legislature, and the judiciary. The judiciary, to me, operates and ensures an accountable and brings about a balanced playing field, and it ensures that everybody stays in line. We cannot just focus on one thing and ignore the other thing. The judiciary, too, does affect development in any country or nation, be it developed or developing, poor or rich. Am I correct or wrong, Mr. Mwata?
Come again?
I'm saying the judiciary, an independent and strong judiciary system, definitely does affect the development or operations in any country. Your comment on that?
Absolutely. The law is a translation of the rights and the wrong of the people. Now, in any society, if we do not respect the law, we do not have an elaborate way of enforcing the law, we do not have a structure in place and institutions that are credible enough to institute the law, they impact every aspect of human development. So it is important that it be done in a manner that is responsible and respectable.
Well said, my friend. And let me just, from the beginning, outline here is that we are going to look at issues to do with, I'll be very honest with you, my friends, even those listening to us out there. I was very disturbed by the statement and the fact that the government can say they recognize that the task force was costing more money than it was collecting. I think that is a very worrisome statement. Let me also welcome back Ms. Chansa. She's joining us again. Welcome back, Ms. Chansa.
Hello?
Okay, we are having problems over there. Like Mwata said, that the law is the translation of the law and the way the proceedings and how the judicial system operates in the country is very, very important. Dr. Mulenga, I am very troubled by that statement by the government that the task force was gobbling more money than it was collecting.
Yes, indeed, it's troubling because, you know, how can you not balance the books on a task force? I don't understand. But it's good that they admit it, so at least we have some information. You see.
Would somebody be wrong to say it is just another excuse for them to have a reason for dismantling the task force?
I haven't got information to that effect, but it could be. It could be because they have to find some good way of getting out of it. You see, so that they chose a good reason for themselves, but at the same time, it helped us because we got information. In other words, they were revealing something without them knowing that when they tell us that it was costing more, they thought that we'll get sympathy on that issue. But at the same time, it enrages people because it just shows that how can a government continue operating, you know, in the red like that.
Interesting situation. Cletus, really, we understand, you see, what we understand the whole essence of, probably this is something really that Dr. Ndolo should have addressed as well. It's just that we chose to focus on Kabuela's case. I do not see task forces, I do not see tribunals in America or England. I stand to be corrected. They let the existing courts and judicial organs that are in place in the government, in the nation, address or deal with corruption cases as they come. Why do we have to form task forces and tribunals in Zambia?
Okay, you know, the whole thing that we've been discussing then today is that they stem to the same thing that Dr. Ndolo kept on hammering, you know. He told us that, and we all know, that the institutions in Zambia are very, very weak. And they are weak because, like in most African countries, the president is like a king. You know, everybody, all those officers, including the DPP, the directors, the Inspector General of Police, the Chief Justice, you know, including the Speaker of the House, depend on him. You know, so they have to act good towards him for their jobs to be secure. So that's the bottom line. And going to the task force, you can imagine, you know, the president said it was, they spent up to $13 million.
Dollars, yes.
From the time that the task force was built. And this, you know, this expenditure, when I looked at it, it just talks about fees, lawyer fees. So we don't know how much was spent on all other things, you know, including miscellaneous. So this figure could even double or triple. I don't know. But even as it is, this is a lot of money that the government could have built, you know, a 21st century institution of the Anti-Corruption Commission. Anti-Corruption Commission, given all this money, it could have had the muscle to handle. After all, they have the experience and a lot of learned people there at SEC. You know, so the idea, it goes back to what I asked Kawela. Helped blind. When President Manawasa was building the task force, he had this personal feeling about getting Dr. Chiluba and his former ministers. You know, it was personal. If you had left it to professionals, they could have built a good case. Probably Dr. Chiluba would have been in jail by now. But the case was rushed because they had personal passion. In the same way that I told Kawela that the Post, you know, I love the Post. The Post has lost his direction because of their personal hatred towards the president. And the president, you know, he responds to that. It becomes a village quarrel between the president and the press. So both of them, they are not serving the Zambian public. As it was noted, that case wasn't, Kawela's case wasn't even going to be going to court. Thank you.
Patrick, you've heard what Cletus has said. Your response?
You know, it's to some extent, you know, I think the whole President Manawasa was a lawyer. So I would say that from that perspective, he understood what he was dealing with as he started the prosecution against the former Dr. Chiluba. And so, and then the other thing on the post, I think what the post in trying to achieve some form of balance of reporting and trying to market themselves, they end up building a personal vendetta maybe against people, because there are issues surrounding some of the leaders in the post themselves. But I think I would agree that sometimes they tend to be so personal, and in the wrong process it becomes like, you know, one-to-one confrontation with a sitting president.
Does this seem to be a common trend that has perpetuated over the years, Dr. Kaela? You remember, I think, I can't remember exactly what year it was, just towards leading to the elections in 1991. Dr. Kaunda's son was in court, I think, for a murder charge or something, and he was acquitted by then the Chief Justice, or I'm sure everybody remembers what I'm talking about here. Dr. Mlenga, relate that situation to what Patrick has said about these, some of these things being personal vendettas in our judicial system. Our politicians using the judicial system for personal vendettas.
Yeah. First of all, I endorse what both the guys are saying, you know, Patrick and Cletus. I think that's quite obvious. And then my own position is that I do believe that in Africa, African leaders, the presidents or prime ministers, you know, they always try to have a finger into the judicial system. They find a way of trying to influence it. That is one explanation why perhaps, you know, Patrick Levi Mwanawasa was quick, you know, to appoint that task force, because then he knew that, you know, with his presidential influence, then he could perhaps, you know, push things, you know, to end up the way he wanted, you see. And that's not very healthy. That's not very healthy at all. But we do know that even in developed countries, they do make up, institute task forces and tribunals and so on. But They let those institutions not do its job, and it's only in the last alternative if they have to go that way. Because when you do that, it's indirectly you are endorsing the fact that your institutional base is not strong. Yeah, the job which task force was asked to do could have been done by other institutions if they were running properly. But in, as it were, our institutions were not running properly, recognized even by appointing a task force. You see?
Excellent. As we continue, let me recognize a friend who has called in. Muriel, good morning.
Good morning. Sorry, I'm so late, I tell you.
What's happening? We are missing you, friend.
I know. India, I'm with India and I'm with Africa. I got to do something.
I know. We need to talk to that gentleman like you suggested.
Yeah. Next week, I think you said.
Oh, okay. We're talking about judicial systems here in Africa and in Zambia in particular. Mwata, was the task force necessary or it was a personal vendetta?
the task force to deal with the corrupt cases of Chiluba.
Yes,
the necessity was there. However, like you know, Dr. Mlenga has stated, it was an indicator that the institution was wrong. Now, here is what we do in organization development. In reorganization, and most of the people call them organization re-engineering. Here is what you have to look at. What are the existing structures, and what are they set up to do? Are they performing up to the expectations? Or if they are not, then you have to reorganize them, or you have to either sunset on them, or you have to retool them. Now, what we did here in Zambia was we saw that there was a weakness here, and we threw money at it. Okay, I cannot believe that an issue that was supposed to be so apparent took so many years to prove and end up in a failure. It's ridiculous. So what it told us was that we do not have a head screwed on the issues regarding our judicial system, and we need that to be examined. I don't know whether we have lobotomists in Zambia that could do that for us, but that needs to be done. And then we need to make sure that all the institutions in government, as you were saying earlier, that the government is composed of three organs that are supposed to be operating independent of each other, so that there would be checks and balances. But what we have is an overlap of power, especially coming from the executive into these other two organs of government. We're supposed to have those separations there. And it's by checking into each other would we ensure that they are operating up to the expectations, and they are constantly renewing themselves and filling in the cracks when they begin to fall apart.
Muriel, how independent is the judiciary in Guyana, and how much influence does the political system have on it?
That's a heavy question that, you know, I don't know if I can answer that in 1 second. I got to really think on that. You know, the judicial systems in most of our countries, sadly enough, seem to be, not impermeable, you know.
Uh-huh.
Seem to be influenced by lots of stuff. You know, I'm sure it might be the same in Zambia, but, you know, there's so many influences that affect the judicial system and as such affect the outcome of judicial processes. So I will kind of take a back seat here and listen.
This is a heavy subject or topic.
It is, yeah, you know. It's
and that's why, I don't know where, Dr. Mlenga, whether you've heard me, I've made this comment, I think, twice now, third time. Certain circles felt that this wasn't a progressive discussion or developmental, but I beg to differ, just like Dr. Ndulo said, because you cannot just dwell on one thing and ignore the other. These are some of the things that affect investment and the development. And to some people, this is important before they come into your country. Cletus, am I right or wrong?
Yes, Nathan, you're very right, you know. As we are always saying, it's you can't have the legislature and the judiciary always looking up to the executive, because they are supposed to be partners, you know. We can't call ourselves a democracy when, in fact, we are a kingdom.
Nathan,
go ahead, Dr. Mlenga.
I did hear you when you said that some people were saying that this is not an important topic.
Mm-hmm.
No, I also beg to differ. This is the most important topic. You know, it's a very crucial topic. Because, you see, if you don't sort out, you know, your judicial system, if you don't know where they are, what they think, what they do, then basically everything else falls between the cracks. You know, so this is an extremely, extremely, extremely important, you know, topic. Those people were talking like that. I guess they don't know what it means, you know, to have someone, you know, someone's rights being protected. Your rights of any kind, freedom or whatever it is, human and so on, would not be protected if you have a shoddy judicial system. It's the judicial system which empowers people to do what they want to do, whether it's a politician, whether it's an administrator, whether it's the, you know, discouraging a company from throwing away toxic waste in your car. It's got to come from the judicial system. So it's important.
Exactly. Patrick,
you know, Nathan, I was wanted to actually ask Dr. Ndulo, because he mentioned something that was very cardinal, and he says the law we are following is 1911 English law. And it just so happened when I was in Zambia in 2007, I asked one of my friends who's a lawyer, you should know him, you know. And he said when they were trying to privatize these companies, there was no law in Zambia that actually catered for privatization. And so they were going by the book and just doing things the way that they thought were best. And if you look at the United States, I think one of the things that has made this country even to progress, when they declared themselves independent from Britain, a lot of things changed, including how you open doors, where you drive. It was a total rebellion against, you know, the former colonial masters. And today they have an independent mind. And I think this aspect of establishing proper laws, for example, in Africa, in particular Zambia, I think it's very cardinal. You know, I always laugh when we look at our judges wearing the white wig, you know. You know, you begin to wonder, say, is it necessary for them to wear those white wigs? I think they look funny, you know. And but the lawyers themselves look forward to wearing the wig, you know. So, you know, we need to ask ourselves deeper questions.
Okay. Let me welcome a caller from area code 917. 917, welcome to the show, and please introduce yourself.
Hi, good morning. My name is Sakala Henry from New York.
Henry, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
I'm sure you're following. I hope you've been following our discussion thus far. We are simply examining or just looking at some of the proceedings in our court system and the judicial system. Let me throw this question to anybody who wants to respond to it. What are some of the reflections or characteristics of a strong judicial system? Is it how many politicians go to jail or rich people?
not really. Really, the way I can answer that question is the objectivity of the judicial system.
So,
you see, our judicial system is not objective, it's really subjective. So judicial system should act independently, not being influenced by anybody.
Somebody else?
Yeah, the operative word there is should.
Yeah. That's a good synopsis. That's a good answer. It's a good answer. And but we have to add on the fact that we have to make sure that they interpret the law correctly. You see? If there is any law on the books, they have to be able to interpret, you know, that law correctly and fairly. So the question of impartiality is very, very crucial.
Muriel, you were saying something?
Yeah, what I was saying is that the word should is the word that really stops us from doing what should be done, because something interferes with the process. People know what should be done, but then there's something that interferes with that process. Right now, I don't want to be off subject, but there's something called the great land grab that's going on in many of our countries. The people coming in and investing in our land, buying up land for investment purposes, so that perhaps when things change, you know, they could sell that land, and they're buying up fertile land in our countries. I don't know if it's happening in Zambia. But this is also something that goes through the judicial process. Somebody needs to know that this is happening, and should it be happening. So these seem to be happening in our country, that the justice system seems to be out of it, outside of it, when they should be deeply concerned with what is happening in terms of social justice in our countries, you know. So that's, I don't know, it's very complicated and very, it's a very important topic to be discussed, but I don't know if one session could do it.
So, Patrick, based on what Henry has said about a judicial system which is objective, Chance Abuela's case, therefore, is not objective.
It's not objective. It's not objective because it was. You could see from the beginning that it was personal vendetta and also against the post. So it was not even in the interest of the nation. And it was... a circus of errors, like I read in one of the commentaries. There was a lot of errors that were committed in the way. And like you mentioned earlier on, Nathan, the resources that were actually put on this same case, you know, it actually defeats the same purpose that the president comes back again and says, oh, listen, we spent $13 million on prosecuting the former president, and the money that supposedly should have been taken was just about maybe $500,000 or $1 million, so we're spending more money. But, you know, he was just doing the same thing that he was doing, you know,
coming against. So it was not objective, and you know, such things, you know, and this is why we are here discussing these important issues concerning our country. So it wasn't objective at all.
So Henry, if yes. if this case against Chan, supposed editor, post newspaper editor, was not objective, who, and in I don't know, say whatever you can say about this, who should have stood up and told the president this is not a professional approach to things?
You know what I can say? A man called Frederick Douglass, he once said, power concedes nothing when out of demand, and power cannot concede to a demand if a demand is coming from the people who are not together, or rather from a constituency of people who seem to have lost their testicular fortitude.
Mm-hmm.
If we, the Zambians, cannot stand and speak where it is wrong and speak with one voice, the same stuff shall continue happening time and again. But when Zambians stand and push, there is nothing that is so strong than the unity of the people. The unity of the people is stronger than a hydrogen atomic bomb. That's what many people haven't yet tried in Zambia. We have tried to pray. Yes, it works, but it doesn't work the way we want it to be. People have tried to make small riots. Yes, small riots, you end up being in prison. But when people stand together as one, things work out. What I've said, we Zambians, we tend to be puppets and boot triggers. If we can really build our bond together and push things, things can happen. I'll just tell you one example. When the Minister of Land came here in New York, we all spoke with one voice and told him that, listen, we're all Zambians, and whatever takes place in Zambia, we are part and parcel.
Why exactly.
Why don't you give us access, the same rights people in Zambia have to buy land, that you can now find a channel of us here that we can even buy land back home there? What's impossible? He said, you know, we haven't thought about that. We're going to think about it. This year, they sent a letter to us through the mission to compile the names of the people who are interested in buying land back home and the area where they want their land to be bought. And right now, I'm doing that. When people stand together as one and they speak as one voice and they agree, things happen. You see, even on Chasakabwela, what happened was people started blogging on the internet and people started putting what they think about the case and what should be decided. I was one of them who wrote about that case, and I said something. But, you know, if you look at Chancellor's, what he published, her motive was not to disgrace the women. Her motive was to make the government act quick over the crisis. But they didn't look beyond the picture. Then they just looked at the picture and make a decision that is wrong. What was the motive behind that? That's why they were not picking. So, according to your question, togetherness is the answer.
Well said, my brother. In view of what Henry has said, let me also remind everybody that next Saturday we are having Mrs. Ngoza Muntari, the Diaspora Desk at State House Liaison Officer. We'll be talking to her. So, people like Henry, I'm going to need you here to come and put some spice to this discussion with Mrs. Ngoza. And this is going to be an opportunity for all of us in the diaspora to come and ask the questions, raise the issues that need to be raised, like Henry has said about the issue of the land that they raised with the minister when he came into what? Titus Natala.
Yes.
I know you've been trying to get, we've been trying to get Chancellor to come back to be part of this discussion. But we are having problems, and I have somebody else also from Minnesota on 763-4633. Good morning.
Yeah.
Good morning. Just listening.
Oh, okay. Thank you. We always appreciate people joining us, even if they are just listening. You are welcome, my brother. Mwata, you heard what Henry has said.
Yes.
Togetherness.
Yes.
Is going to make things happen.
Yes. How are we going to do this the togetherness from the diaspora point of view?
I would like to take it a step further. You see, in Zambia we have this tendency to want to be the power that decides, you know, this or that, you know, because you have title, okay? Allow me to go back to what Cletus had said when he was talking, he was posing some questions or making a comment on what Chancellor Kabila had said, that the post has always verified the position of the presidency. And Chancellor said, you know, we call it as we see it. I think these people that hold title and we call them honorable just because they got elected into office, I think that is ridiculous. You see, that is where this problem emanates from. But when we begin to fear the title and not the responsibility of that title, when the person is in that title and they begin to lose focus, then we need to call them up, you know, call them to carpet and ask them why they're behaving that way. And now, if there is no forum for us to approach that individual, this person is arrogant, this person is calling dogs on us, and this person is bringing the military on us, then we have to follow the other avenues. That's why you see people now rebelling, people doing some other outlandish things, because we do not respect the forums that are there, the channels, the civil channels that are there to contact the elected people, because when they get into office, they become so big. And then let me talk about a little bit about the issue of land. The issue of land, we totally disrespect the indigenous rights to their lands in the name of investment. We call people, you know, into the country and we displace the indigenous people from their ancestral lands because of the dollar. What is it that we're really doing? And then, you know, when somebody, a Zambian, wants to buy land, you know, he can't even find a channel that he could use to purchase that land because we are giving a priority to the foreigner who is bringing the dollar. So we have all our priorities, you know, all over the place, and it's like there is no one with a straight a view of where we are supposed to be focusing to address the concerns of the Zambians, both at home and abroad. We have very serious issue to address here, and one of this Chancellor Kabila case was just highlighting one of those. We need to have these issues well outlined and then be reported on from time to time by the government. This is what we have done about education. This is what we intended to do. This is what we've done about healthcare. This is what we intended to do. This is what we've done about the social institutions, and this is what we intended to do. Give a report, an accurate report about what the government is accomplishing instead of just bickering amongst themselves in the newspapers and on the radio and television.
Well said. I'd like to add something to what was just said. May I?
Go ahead, Mira.
Yeah, a couple of things. One, I really like the fact that you mentioned the displacement of the indigenous groups, etc. But another thing I think that people are looking at African land for is what's below the ground. And we don't know what's below the ground. There's so much richness in Africa. So I think these people are hedging that when they buy this land, they could drill and find stuff below the ground, which we don't know exists, and then they claim everything. So if we have to sell land, if we need money for like social programs, do not sell what is below the ground. You understand? Because that is where the riches lies. So that's one thing, if you have to sell any. But the next thing, I'd like to just make an analogy to doctors and lawyers and judges. Many of our people come abroad for education, right? And when they go back home, lots of things happen. Let's say the doctor. You may have a doctor from Zambia who's done the best training in America or in England, got the best results, and goes back home to the worst hospitals. So he goes home, he has to deal with all kinds of stuff that the person who elects to stay in the developed countries do not have to deal with. So he is already, like, compromised. He's confronted with all kinds of issues. So the same with the judge and the lawyer. Those who plan to go back home, they confront stuff that's not taught in schools, and they got to now adjust to that. So even if they're called honorable, they still are honorable, but what happens to this honorable nature of them really flies in the face of what they have to really work with home. And then temptation comes up, you see. So I'm believing that, you know, the diaspora perhaps could have like a discussion with really how lawyers, when you've left law school here and you've gone into any law, legal background, legal company or whatever, what are your experiences here? And then discuss with those who went back home. And you see such a big difference. The stuff they have to deal with, you don't have to deal with over here anymore. But they go home to what really exists, where are the problems, and they don't know how to deal with that. So I just wanted to add that 2 cents to the discussion.
Well said, Muriel. Dr. Mlenga.
Yes, I've been listening patiently.
Sorry,
yes, when Moata was speaking, I heard you laugh in the background that I knew you reloaded your gun.
First of all, I just wanted to make sure that we don't overstretch this objectivity of the judicial system. What I'm comfortable with is, objectivity versus subjectivity. That's
okay.
For me, that's the issue. In other words, because when a judicial system is subjective, it's basically that's when it can be misused by the state or by anybody else who is in power. But if you have an objective judicial system, then it becomes impervious. You know, you cannot penetrate that. That's the difference. That's the difference for me. That's what I wanted to make sure that, you know, we understand that. And then the second thing I wanted to stress on is the weakness of our institutions. You know, the weakness of our institutions is what lies behind the fact that, you know, even Zambians in the diaspora, they want not to buy land. They don't know where to go. If the institution was there, if the procedure was there, clear, you know, just like water, you know, then you don't have a problem. But because we don't have those strong institutions, that's why we have to go begging to those people who are in power. So, oh, where am I going to find land? Where can I find land? You know, that's because of the weak institutions. And then finally, I think it's Henry when he was talking about asking a question, you know, when the delegation was in New York.
Uh-huh.
Really, to me, you know, Nathan, really to me, what the answer that guy gave those people in New York was proper. What he was saying is that it's not me, it's you guys to get together. You know, if you guys have a strong presentation, strong representation, then we'll see what we can do about it. If we don't, then it's up to you. We don't care.
You see, Dr. Mlenga, what you are saying right there, the response that, I don't know whether it was the Minister or Permanent Secretary said, you see, that is the whole purpose or essence of whether the government has set up a diaspora desk at State House or not. It is up to us.
Right.
How is that thing going to work? You see, that is why we had a discussion, I believe it was last weekend, the diaspora speaking with one voice, and you see, when we are bringing Mrs. Muntari here, we are not going to, let's not expect answers or miracles from her. She wants to hear from us, if
exactly.
I'm informed that. She wants to hear from us. That's what we are going to talk about here. Now, let's go
and
back
the,
about,
yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And you better emphasize that. It's,
yes.
She wants to hear from us. That's what it is. I can assure you already, Nathan, my feeling, my gut feeling is that already we are behind. The government is ahead of us. We're behind in the sense that we are not organized. We have been asking for this thing. Now a government comes, oh, here is a desk. Now we don't know what to do with it.
I'm good, yes.
Now, that's interesting. So, ladies and gentlemen, please let's get ready to give some information to Mrs. Muntari when she comes. Let's not waste our time and say, what does the president this, the president that? No, the question is you and I living in the diaspora. Let me zero in down to the expense aspect of a judicial system or procedure. This is my concern. I am very concerned about this. One of the things that we really don't tend to look at when you are looking at any situation is we always try to focus on the legal fees and stuff like that. But what about the man hours
and human resource expertise, if we were able to convert that in a numerical or remuneration terms, we don't seem to focus and look at that when we are. I am really disturbed about the government saying the task force was costing more than it was collecting. Patrick?
No way.
Another. No, that one too, Nathan. Let me also correct you a little bit. In the sense that don't lead a discussion basically on the government statement. You know, what you should remind them is that yes, it's okay to have a task force if it is objective and if it has got a mandate which is really really prescribed and that they stick to it. You see, and that there is time limit and so on. So it's not a question of, they should have told us, they should have been telling us that, okay, the references which Mwanawasa set up for this task force have not been met, instead of just saying that, no, oh, we have been spending more than we have been collecting, as if that was the main preference of the task force. That was not the main issue. The main issue was not to set up the task force to collect money which has been stolen. No, that was not its mandate. The mandate was to get to the bottom of corruption and to prove corruption, that the Zuma's regime was corrupt. That was the main mandate. But when you take it in a different direction, it means that you are going out of that mandate. And that is not correct.
Thank you, Dr. Mulenga. Somebody else wanted to comment. Was it Cletus?
Yes. First of all, I wish to welcome my friend Mazaela Sakala Henry for coming to this talk radio. I think it's very important because he's also the chairman of the Zambian family here in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. So welcome, Henry.
Oh, thank you very much. How are you?
How are you, my friend? So I wish to answer quickly to what Mwaka said. Mr. Mwaka, I always appreciate your contribution, man. And you alluded to what my discussion was with Chancellor and how she answered that they report as they see it, you know. And I don't know if it's only me that I've seen that the post, because I believe so much in them, that they have really, really taken a very narrow agenda right now against the president, you know. And I say this because if a reporter can say that, you know, when I see a thief, I'll report it's a thief. And that she meant was about how they have been calling Dr. Chiluba a thief even after the courts vindicated him. So I wanted to ask her before she left if she would be comfortable for anybody, you know, with education or not, to call her a pornography vendor after she's been after her case has been dismissed by the courts. You know, I say this because the judiciary is not just there to report or even, you know, to use bad language. We read, ask Henry, we read the New York Times. The New York Times is always, you know, taken as a left-wing newspaper. But I tell you, it has a lot of credibility that when we're having the Iraq war here, they had all these strong editorials. They never one day, you know, called President Bush George. Not one day, because they believe he's the president of their nation, first and foremost. Fourth, the media and the press in particular are alluded to as the fourth wing, you know, after the executive, the legislature, and the judiciary, because they have, you know, this role that they play in society that is almost constitutional in talking for everybody. So when they have a chief and they run an editorial for 30 days, starting with Rupia Banda and his minions, and Chiluba the fifth, I don't see that, you know, they are rising beyond all these people we are laughing at are. It's like they are taking the burden of civilization in a different way.
I think Nathan, let me say something about that. I think what you are saying, I'm glad you are saying it, because I thought I was the only person who was in that category. And that category is, we all love the post, but we hate the post when they are waging battles, you know, against like the president. You know, you can wage a battle against Chiluba, you can wage a battle against RRB, so long as it's objective, so long as it's impartial, so long as it's fair. You can't just simply, because you know that everybody is reading you, you can't just go everywhere. You know, you have to stick with what you're supposed to do. As a newspaper, you are supposed to present the information correctly as much as possible to the public and let the public make up their mind. It's not for you to make up the mind and say that this Chiluba is a thief, this guy, this Arabi is corrupt. It's not your job as a newspaper. Your job as a newspaper is to present the information and facts to the public and let the public come up with the names, not you.
Let me take us back to the question that I raised, which Dr. Mlenga corrected some comments that I made, which I very much appreciate. I think when I was talking about the task force before Cletus came in, Titus and Patrick, Titus, you are quiet. I know you haven't said much. This is very important, and even when you're putting something across, I appreciate Dr. Mlenga streamlining this thing by not, you see, I was trying to focus on the cost, but Dr. Mlenga brought out a very important point, terms of reference. Titus, should the government have said the terms of reference for which this was set up is done, and I think at this stage we shift the responsibility to Anti-Corruption Commission. I want you to respond to that.
I think myself, I would like to start from what Dr. Kayela Mlenga mentioned, which I kind of understand and adhere to, and I'm glad Dr. Kayela Mlenga being around and Cletus having also a different view. This balances our talk. But I wanted to also point out that, yes, and probably the post might go wrong somewhere in terms of how they handle something. But I want to also address the issue where I think even the head of state, we should get into a box of professionalism. Because what happens, what I see here is, I think we get into a situation where you're acting on emotions. And once you get off from the, when you're acting on emotions, now the professionalism is not available anymore. If somebody said something wrong about the post, now the person from the post is just trying to attack emotionally. You can recall from the press conference, it's on YouTube, how President Rupia Banda was talking. The first firing of the two ministers.
Yeah, the two ministers.
If you look at it and you listen carefully, it's probably worse than a colonial master.
Mm-hmm.
How they were doing things. You can see from the talk that somebody is talking from power. Not maybe somebody would have even done a mistake, but it doesn't deserve the emotional things, and there's no professionalism in a press conference. And
mm-hmm.
some of these things cost us later on, because it will be projected all over the world, and yes, then you start defending an issue of what kind of professionalism do we have for our head of state.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'll be saying he's educated, is this and that, is running the country good, is steering it this way and that way, but the question comes into, is that the best way we could carry a press conference, which will be aired nationwide? Think about monkeys and whatever happens. If things happen, it's not supposed to be worldwide, but with the technology we have now, you almost want to hide in the diaspora that, you know, somebody will ask you to say, hey, this is how you do things. And then what do you say? You know, so we have to get back. It's everybody that has to get back to professionalism where the post also has to get back. If thing is emotional, you think twice, still get to the subject as opposed to addressing emotional issues. Same with the president, that doesn't leave him out. It has to be that kind of a thing. Otherwise, you find people trying to be loyal, even if somebody did something of either rudeness or unprofessionalism. Still, somebody will say, well, I'm loyal to this. And now it makes the whole thing, people are now coding it as a government. They are professional ministers and whatever, but when you start coding it as the government is doing this, if it went emotional and did the wrong thing, now it's coding everybody, when it's not even everybody. So we have to be careful in terms of how the head and the paper, the newspaper is becoming famous. Also, most people like it, so they have to also adhere.
Okay.
Hold
on. Let me recognize the caller on area code 678. 678, welcome to the program. Somebody calling on 678. Hello. Okay. Maybe the some people just choose to listen. They don't want to respond. Go ahead. Who is that?
It's Mwata.
Mwata, go ahead.
Yes. I do appreciate the comments both by Mr. Kletus and Dr. Mlenga and also Mr. Natala in. The idea is these people that are in elected positions, I don't think they are in power, but they're in elected positions. They are supposed to set the tone. When they don't set the tone, they are all over the show. It becomes very difficult for other people to follow their footsteps because whatever it is that they are trying to do, that's what everybody is saying. Now, if somebody is against the path that they are taking, there has to be a forum, there has to be a process that they have to follow to counter that. Now, we don't have that in Zambia. That's why the post, our presidents, beginning from the first one, have been arrogant people from the beginning. They've been arrogant people, and once they're in the office, they think that they walk on water. So the post has become one of the avenues through which, you know, those excesses could be countered and have the support of the corporation to back itself up in a court of law should it step over its boundaries. So we need to have that balance where the people that are elected are actually espousing the values of our country, the value that makes our Zambia unique. I don't encourage the post to be insulting the presidency per se, but the presidency should be setting the tone, living up to the expectations, so that we can respect it because respect begets respect. But if they're ones that are soiling the office, then they should be ready to face the consequences. In Zambia, we're so docile. We always acquiesce to the power that be just because it's the power. No, it has a responsibility to the citizens. It has to do things so that we will benefit from its being there. The government shouldn't exist for itself, but for the people. That's the point I'm trying to put across.
Okay. Patrick, Dr. Poken, Titus, Letters, and now Mwata.
You know, Nathan, somebody said something that I really liked because, you know, it goes back. It goes all the way back in 1964 when we got our independence from Britain. A wrong precedence has been set by the first president, and it went on through to the second president, now Mwanawasa, and we have the fourth president, Mr. Lupia Banda, where you begin to think a leader is untouchable. Whatever they say carries. So you can't argue with them. You can't point things which are wrong. We have this wrong notion, especially from Zambia, that Nathan, if you disagree with me or I disagree with you, it means I hate you. And that's totally wrong. And that's what we see always in our country. If I disagree with you or you disagree with me, oh, Patrick doesn't like me. And the next thing is Patrick is fired. You know, or Nathan is fired. So I don't think that's how leadership has to be
done, especially in our government circles. And that said, I think the Post is in business. They are making money. That's they thrive on news, and they have to jump on news before it perishes. So you would see that they always lump, you know, and even here you would see that news is always, people like to jump on negative things. A human being is bitten by a dog, it's not news. When a human being bites a dog, it becomes news, you see, because that is out of the world. So I think what we need to do as a people is to reflect back and go back and do some inventory, you know, some stalking and say, you know what, what do we need to do? How are we going to approach this? And this aspect, Nathan, of going back to our judicial system, I think it's the beginning of a transformational change that should happen in our country. If we can put that and our judicial system is independent and they can make decisions based on the law, then our nation is going to move forward.
Correct. You know, one of before I go to Henry, Henry is a very key component to our discussion today by virtue of you being a leader in a Zambian community abroad. One of the things that really blows my mind, Muriel, is listening to the things these people were saying to each other, Obama and Hillary, during the campaign. But Hillary is the third or fourth most powerful person in the country right now. That is meat for thought.
That's true.
That is meat for thought. Henry, let's focus back on our, going back to our discussion. I just threw that in based on what Patrick has said for us from other cultures to think much about that. Because I think, me, I look at it like a person who really speaks their mind and criticizes the things I do, I need to listen to what they need to say rather than that person who always praises me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You see, that is what was the downfall of Dr. Kaunda. They were telling him wrong things. Henry, you are a leader in the Zambian community. The judicial system of our nation is a very key component to development. What, in your view, do you think we should do as Zambians living abroad to make a contribution to our home country in the judicial perspective?
You know, one thing we don't know in our country, there is time for politics and there is time for governance. People don't distinguish that. And you look at the doctor. The doctor related very clearly and articulate on the issue concerning the task force. And what was its purpose? Is to investigate and to find out those people misusing our funds. And they say it should come to an end. You know why they want it to come to an end? Let's look beyond that. Remember, we had Management Board of Health in Zambia. When the other government came, they said, no way, these guys, we shouldn't have this. They cut off the Management of Board of Health. What happened later on? How much money have we lost? They stole money. That was after the Management Board of Health is gone. Because maybe that's my perspective, and that's what I'm seeing. Maybe they saw that they cannot find their hands on the money, because there is this board which is really checking where every penny and every dollar goes. Now, since these people are a stumbling block in our way to get to that fund, the only way we can get there is by getting them out. So other people played good maths and they presented good presentation why these people shouldn't be there, and the Management Board of Health went. And if they're saying the tax force should go too, they know what they want to do.
Uh-huh.
The tax force should go according to what they're saying, and I'm suggesting that the food reserve agent should go too. Because if you read the Act of April, if I'm not mistaken, to the 1993 or 92, if you read its mission and why it was established and where it is now, they are really going parallel to what it was established, because its strategy was by 2010, there shall be no shortage of mill meal in Zambia, there shall not be increase of prices of mill meal in Zambia, because it was their marketing strategy that they would store maize during bum harvest, so that when we don't have a good harvest, they will release
the maize into the market at a reasonable price, that they stabilize the market price of millet, which is our staple food. But now, almost in 2010, what happened that 3-4 months ago, we had shortage of millet, and where is the price of millet? So in those cases, the things the tax force should go. I suggest, I personally, that the food reserve agent should go, because they're not doing what they were created, what it was formed to be.
Mm-hmm.
If their statement, their mission is clear.
That's a Zambian leader speaking right there. Muriel, some of the developmental issues for us in the diaspora, we should look at making a contribution towards improving our judicial system. What do you think should be some of the approaches we should take? You know, I'm asking this question because we are just not talking. We are looking at a way for us to make a positive contribution.
Okay. I think that the main thing is not to judge them, but to really strike up a relationship with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they are in the hot seat. Even though there must be objectivity, there's a lot of subjectivity happening because they're confronted, as I said before, with stuff that we don't understand, and they have to deal with it day by day. So I think we need to have really an open line of discussions with them so they could share with us, you know, what they're going through and find ways that, you know, see how we could support them or maybe suggest to them that this should be this and that and that. But sometimes in the diaspora, we act as though we know everything.
Mm-hmm.
Talk as though we have all the answers. And everybody else who's home is an idiot, you know. And sometimes that's what rankles the people who are back home because of our approach and our arrogance and our attitude. So we need to calm down at times, you know, and just be cool and put ourselves in their shoes and see, you know, how can I help this guy help my country better, you know. So I don't know if that helps anybody, but we need to just buckle down a bit and just be cool and relax.
It does, Muriel. What you're saying is very crucial. Dr. Mlenga, not judge them, but strike a relationship. Where do we begin?
From where Titus left from.
Okay, where did Titus left from? Remind us. Because before you respond, Dr. Mlenga, please, to everybody listening to us out there in Europe, in Africa, in Asia, in Australia, this forum, like I said, is not about bashing anybody. Our objective here is to bring news and information with a view of making a contribution from the Zambian community in the diaspora. That's why I'm asking Dr. Mlenga to say, Muriel has said, don't be judgmental, but strike a relationship. So where do we start from? Somebody from Australia is listening and he says, you know what, I would like to make a contribution in the judicial whatever. So where does the person start from, Mlenga?
It starts from, jokingly I was saying, we have to ask our people to be very professional, you know.
Uh-huh.
We have to make sure that the judicial system or the people who are players in the judicial system know that we are concerned if they are not being professional. That's why I say that we continue from where Titus left from. That includes the president. That includes the post. That includes everybody. You see? Because if we are not professional, then everything breaks down. I hope this case, Chancellor Kabuela's case, is going to help the post to turn itself down to the level whereby whatever they are dealing with, they have to make sure that they are being very professional. Because it's not just a question of being in a position of power. Being the most powerful independent media in Zambia and probably in the region there, the post has to be very professional if they are going to use that power fairly. Otherwise, they are going to abuse it, like we have seen, that they tend to abuse it sometimes, you see. And finally, I have to demonstrate that point by saying that if they are so powerful, it's like Mwata was saying that, you know, it's a counterbalance, you know, to the excesses of the executive or an individual president. If they are that strong, they can use that position to educate or raise awareness amongst the public so that, you know, good presidents or good members of parliament are elected. If they fail to do that, then they are missing a point somewhere. That's my contribution.
You know, okay. And Nathan, what he said is very, very, very important. You know, and another thing we need to look at is that the judicial system doesn't rest solely on the judge's shoulders. It's the system. So if the system doesn't function as the system should, then all the fallout happens at the judge level because he gets the blame, or she, because the judges who are women too, I'm sure. She gets the blame. So you need to look at the system and where the potholes are in that system, where the lack of professionalism happens in that system. And that's where we got to try to help to fix it, or to, at least to confront it or to discuss about it. You know, that's when it gets to the judge's level. Sometimes it's too late, and he needs to be able or she to control what happens throughout the system. The professional standard needs to be established, etc.
Yeah, it's true. Because, you see, one of the points that mural that you're raising is the issue that when it reaches a certain level, like you have said, the judges, it takes a different turn or a different tone. Mwata, Dr. Mlenga, has emphasized the word professionalism. And he has emphasized it needs to start from the president. Titus alluded to it. Cletus alluded to it at times the way we love RRB. We love RRB. Mr. President, hear me. We love you, sir. Okay? Everybody has alluded to say professionalism, starting from the president to the media to the messenger at the local court in Kabwata and everywhere. Talk to us about that, Mwata.
I would appreciate the moment that begins to happen, and it has to flow from the top. There is only one or two rivers that I know in the world that actually run from the south to the north. One of which is the River Nile. But the moment we begin to see that being exhibited at the top, the president being professional. I think it was Titus who mentioned the firing of ministers on a video YouTube
yes.
video. Yeah, that's the kind of thing that we're talking about. You are not setting a good tone when you do stuff like that. It's embarrassing not only to the person in the presidency, but also to the office of the president. So we need if that started from there, I believe. Then I would be the first person to call the post to check its steps, because there isn't anything that I'm gaining from the post attacking the presidency when the president is actually acting in its boundaries and expectations. But if we don't see that, then it becomes very difficult for me to say that the post is acting unprofessional, because the tone is being set at the wrong decibels by the top office there. Now,
okay.
I'm not saying that should the post should be vilifying the office of the president. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that the responsibility lies first. Before we point a finger at the post, the responsibility to the nation lies first to the office of the president and the government in general. Let them begin to set a tone. Let them begin to set an example of how professionalism should be practiced, and then we can look at these other institutions that are criticizing them or they're providing checks and balances to see whether they're doing a good job or not. But right now, that's what the president is dictating, that's what the presidents have dictated, and that's what the post is acquiescing to.
Yeah, because you see, one of the interesting things is I'm going to keep making references to the Obama administration and prior to him becoming president, because when I follow events and activities, I try to draw lessons from that. Those of you that really followed what was happening there, you noticed that there was really no drama from the Obama campaign. Do you know why? Like you have said, Mwata, the people in the Obama campaign were told no drama.
Right.
No drama. They never responded to anything unless you notice that the response always came from the campaign manager.
Mm-hmm.
He always made the press statement. And you see, people will tell you if you read, and I have followed very closely things leading and they said he was a very calm person. You would even think that he's not undergoing any pressure or there's no tension on his part. I think it's a very important point, and for us to learn our lessons from there. I think we lost Henry. I wanted to ask him something. Eclatus, professionalism. Professionalism. Okay.
First of all, I appreciate what we are discussing. You know, I think all these people listening must be very happy that we are at this stage at this time. And you know, but my friend Matt, I know it's bad that I'm always answering to your points, man.
That's perfectly okay.
Don't take it
personal.
So,
no, not at all.
Yeah, I go back to your sentence that you know, the president sets the pace. Right?
The tone.
Whatever it is. You know why I disagree that? Because there are three elements there. There is
okay.
the office of the president. This will outlive the RRB. Then there is the media. The media will outlive the tiff between Mr. Membe and the Chiluba. You understand? Because these are people's constitutional wings. So if these people have a thief, Mr. Membe has a thief with Chiluba, and he keeps on calling him a thief, and Mr. Chiluba says, "Oh, Membe is is a yellow journalist." You know that the back and forth thing. The first thing is the mud is being thrown at the people's office, the president, because this will outlive all of us. You know, it has to be respected at all costs. You know, so. If we, the other thing I want to talk about is how can diaspora help? Diaspora, first of all, we don't vote, you know. That's the biggest responsibility of any citizen. You have to vote, you know, to have change coming. The other thing is we are not so organized that even when the NCC was formed, we don't have representation there. We will keep on being, you know, in the audience for a long time, just watching.
Can I defend ourselves there?
Is that Henry? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think the presentation we're talking about when they were making amendments and changing the constitution that we had no representation. Actually, what they did was after they drew up the constitution, it was sent to all missions in the foreign countries. And what they did, they wrote a letter to say, since you don't have access, you are not in Zambia. Please, here is where you can find the constitution. Here is the website. Log in and read it and view out your concerns where you think is not good. And by vote, if a lot of people say this should be changed, then the board, whoever were writing the constitution, will see and take that into consideration. Even when our president came here in New York during the National Assembly, whatever summit, one of the things we wanted him to talk about was about the Constitution. Is it dual citizenship? He said, okay, this thing has raised a lot of concern. As a president, it has reached to my ears, and I'm not going to let you people down. What you want is what needs to be done because it's not my constitution. We are changing it for the people. If that's what you want, it's going to be put in the constitution. So the thing that they gave it to us, but it was up to us to act. Even when they gave me a paper, we distributed it to the members and we gave them the information where they can go and do that. But when I asked the people about what I read in the constitution, and asked somebody, nobody was really trying to talk to me on it. That showed that nobody went there and tried to read and find out what was going on there. And that's right there is a weakness and a problem if we cannot try to be concerned of what's happening in our country. I don't know.
Yeah, you see, Henry, let me concur with what you are saying.
I support Henry on that point.
Yeah, this is the issue, Cletus and everybody listening out there, Australia, Asia, wherever you are, okay? Somebody made a statement 2 weeks ago when we were deliberating the diaspora engagement of the homeland. We are passive people, okay? That is why, Dr. Mlenga, we even got the reaction we did about discussing the judicial system in our country. I can appreciate to a certain extent it's a technical subject, and people don't want to, when people want are made to think or engage in a serious discussion, we don't want to do that. We want to have SATA so that we ask him these questions and the answers and we laugh. Okay? You see, diaspora engagement of the homeland is a very serious issue, like Henry has said. And what we are trying to do here is to address every issue that concerns and affects us as people in the diaspora. Like I have said, next weekend, a process has started about us engaging the diaspora. The government setting up a desk at State House is not their issue. It's our issue, ladies and gentlemen. Mrs. Ingoza is going to come to the show to hear from us, not us hearing from her.
Mm-hmm.
It's us, the Zambian people, who are, we need to do this. It's our responsibility, like Henry has said. Okay? That document the government said, I was reading about all these things in the emails and everything, information was circulating. People were not responding. And that passivity, we need to get over it. It even goes back home when it's time for election. Okay, what do we call it? Apathy? We need to get over that apathy, people. Let's get over that apathy. We need to start engaging. This is a very important topic and a very important subject. And I think I will speak with passion over this and tell us, come on, let's get up, let's get involved, let's do what we need to do. At the end of the day, you may get upset with me by saying this, whether you're an American citizen, Australian citizen, British citizen, at the end of the day, your uncle still lives in Zambia.
You need to
be not only that, Nathan, but you see, people don't fail to see that this affects their own lives. It's not only the family members that they left at home. It affects their own lives because eventually, like Henry is saying, when these people are asking you to participate in changing something and you don't change it, then it works against you. You see,
mm-hmm.
You know, like the contribution about dual citizenship. Apparently, that one Zambians in the diaspora were able to pick that one up. There was a little bit of participation on that issue. But when it comes to other issues, more distant but yet quite also important, they are passive. You know, Namibia just had an election. You know, you read in the newspapers that our friends in the ambassador to Zambia, Namibian ambassador to Zambia, he was reminding the Namibians based in Zambia to go to the embassy and vote. But we don't have the vote. You see, we don't have the vote. But who can bring that vote to us? It's us. It's not those people in Zambia. It's us who can pressurize and make strong suggestions that, no, we need to participate. We need to participate. If we don't do that, then nobody is going to help us. Apparently, because we are in diaspora, we think that people can do things for us. Nobody is going to do anything for you. You have to do it yourself.
Mm. It's very, very important. And let me just say this, that you see, we need to appreciate initiatives or efforts that are made. Because of the discussion that we had 2 weeks ago about us engaging the homeland as a diaspora with people, let's go out there, get the Zambians, especially the leaders, to come and deliberate and discuss these issues. The reason Henry is on this show today is because I think let us reach out to him. Am I right or wrong?
We didn't talk, but I think Henry called in
2 months ago when we had Mr. Chumbanda, but he didn't.
Okay. You see, so those issues are extremely very important, and I really just want to say we appreciate everybody's involvement and participation. Henry, we don't take your time with us here very lightly. You are an influential person in the East Coast there, and we want to engage the Zambians about this thing. Change will only come about when you get involved. Look at what, I'll keep referring to Obama. Look at what this guy did. He realizes that this age group, Muriel, between 18 and 25, 30, they are text or computer, what do they call it, high-tech technology people. They use the text messaging thing to communicate with them. They went on Facebook, and they did whatever they need to do. And you see, when you look at something, you need to learn and get the lessons from there. We're doing our best to get everybody involved here. That is why, as a matter of fact, Zambia Block Talk Radio has also gone on Facebook. What we'd like you to do is become a fan. I know some of you cannot call in or participate, but we'd like to hear your feedback from you on our Facebook page for discussion. Suggest to us some things that you'd like us to do or some topics you'd like us to discuss, some guests you'd like us to bring to the show. And those are some of the things that we just like to do. Now, before we wind up here, let me go through everybody, and let me just get a final statement from everybody here. I'll start with Mwata. Kabwela versus the state, justice or double standards?
Inappropriate.
Inappropriate. Thank you. Cletus, Kabwela versus the state, justice or double standards?
I'll take Dr. Ndulo's statement. He said it was a comet of errors.
Comet of errors.
Yeah.
Patrick, what is your response? Was it justice or double standards?
Yeah, I would say a lot of double standards, a lot of them from the state.
From the state, okay.
Yeah.
Dr. Mlenga, justice or double standards?
It's an eye-opener. It's an eye-opener to our issues. So that's the way I look at it.
Interesting. That's a very interesting statement. Nero, I don't know whether you followed our first discussion when we were talking to the reporter in Zambia who was being prosecuted for having pictures with women giving birth, and we're looking at that and we're saying, was it justice or double? They treated it as a pornographic case, the state. I don't know whether you have any comment on that issue.
When we come to the second issue, I'll comment.
No, they come to the second issue.
If you want me to...
Titus, Kabwela versus the state, justice or double standards?
No comment. I think we can use Kabwela for many other things. That's the only comment I can say. The government can learn most of a lot of things also. That's what I can say. I have more on the second thing.
On the second thing. Okay.
I need a minute to say something, but later on.
All right. Henry, Kabwela versus the state, justice or double standards? I'm creating a fight here with some people.
You're creating a fight.
No, anyway. I'm not creating. No, I'm asking Henry. It's Henry's turn now.
Hello?
Yes, Henry. I said, what's your position on this? Justice or double standard? Kabwela versus the state?
I think the state was wrong.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that wasn't justice they wanted to put. It was a heavy road they wanted to put on Kabwela.
Okay. We have a few minutes here remaining. Dr. Mlenga said it's an eye-opener. Well, how would you respond to that, Mwata?
Yeah, I agree with you.
From this?
I agree. It was unwarranted, yet it still it serves the purpose that Dr. Mlenga's statement describes. It is indeed an eye opener.
Okay, Cletus, Dr. Mlenga says it's an eye opener.
is to the point, because, you know, both people have to learn a lesson that, you know, when somebody gets acquitted, the good feeling that they feel that justice has been done, so should be applied to any other person.
Patrick?
Yeah, it's an eye-opener, because, you know, now, you know, most people are getting to understand what they need to do, and some of the things that happened will be avoided in the future.
Okay. I'll skip Dr. Mulenga. I want him to have the last word.
Before he gets to the last word, Nathan, I just want to do a call for people, as the lady from the diaspora desk comes in next week. Maybe we can brainstorm. We are saying engaging ourselves in the diaspora. Maybe we can try to engage ourselves so we can present to her. Maybe it's about time when we can have a representation from the diaspora. You are talking about the constituencies being increased. Maybe we can have one constituency for the diaspora and we have some representation.
Well, that is exactly what we are trying to do. Like I mentioned, that the very reason that Henry is participating today is, you see, to reach out to people like Henry who are community leaders in their respects. Okay? You know that we have tried to get in touch with a lot of association leaders. Like Henry said, we need to get above this apathy. Okay? It doesn't mean by you appearing on this show, it means you agree with me or you are supporting me. We are just a forum, a medium of disseminating information for us to engage in the discussion. And what Roger has done, I think I forgot to say something here. Did I talk about the funeral of Adrian Peary?
No, you didn't.
No, I didn't. Okay, the reason Roger is not with us today, he's attending a funeral of Adrian Peary in Edmonton, Canada. And I think the service must have started at 10:30 a.m. Edmonton time. I really apologize. I had this on my notes. I don't know how I forgot to do that. So Zambians that are living in the Canadian area who are able to attend this funeral, please call Patrick in Canada on 780-903-6266. Patrick in Pulumbusi, 780-903-6266. I really apologize. I should have spoken about this at the beginning of the show. The late Adrian Peary is going on today, and that's why our good friend Roger Charlie is not with us. Titus, the point that you've raised, we are going to be discussing, and the discussion continues, concerning our engagement of the homeland from the diaspora desk. Well, we are come to the end of the show, and it's the holiday season. Let me say to everybody who lives in continental America that have a great Thanksgiving, and I appreciate everybody participating and coming to the show today. Dr. Mulenga, we thank you. Thank you for
joining today.
Muriel, it's always a pleasure. Henry, I'll be getting with you. Please expect a call from me.
Please, anytime.
I would like us to engage in this. And our usual participant, Mwata, we value you. Cletus, my friend, all those things in your heart, let's keep talking about this. Muriel, thank you. Everybody, have a great Thanksgiving and goodbye from Dallas, Texas.
Hey.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.